if you're going to have description, the best way to get it in there is to insert it within dialogue or within movement. Taylor Stevens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monroe thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stevens Show with Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt, one word at a time.
You know, Taylor, I edit these shows a couple days typically after we record them, and I've noticed that the last two shows we're not laughing as much as usual. We're too serious.
Oh, no. Does that mean you're going to make fun of me?
We're too serious with this work. So we have one more serious show, and then we have to go back to laughing at each other.
Yeah, I can make lots of bloopers, and then we'll laugh a lot.
Okay. You have a couple of events coming up beginning this weekend. You're going to be in Lincoln, Nebraska, of all places, on October 15th. And Omaha.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. There's a writer's group up there. And they're flying me up, and I'll be doing some teaching, which is always fun. I mean, I love doing events. I love being able to connect with my readers and stuff. I mean, I love my readers. If it wasn't for them, I don't know, I'd go nuts. But teaching is especially fun for me because it's like I meet all these people who are looking for advice that I wish I'd had way back when. And I kind of had to figure it all out on my own. And so to be able to tell others, okay, don't worry about this. You're stressing about the wrong thing. You know, just focus on this. And here's how you learn this. And once you get over here, this is what that's like. And just to be able to give that to others, it's fun. It is really, really fun.
So in Lincoln on the 15th, you're going to be teaching at the Nebraska Writers Guild Fall Conference. Does that sound right?
That sounds right, yes.
Okay, and that's at 10:45. And the information for this will be on your website, right?
It should be. If it's not, I need to go fix it. It'll be in the show notes.
Oh, great. See the way she did that? I hope you all saw that. Okay, so you're going to be in Lincoln on the 15th, and then at a couple of different bookstores in Lincoln on the 15th in the evening at Indigo Bridge Books at 7 p.m., and then in Omaha on the 16th at The Bookworm.
Yeah, and so, like, the teaching event is actual teaching, writing, like, a lot of the stuff that we do here on the show, but even more in depth because I can just talk for hours and people can ask me specific questions. I really try and tailor it to the specific needs of the audience rather than just drone on about stuff that doesn't matter. But the book events are more just like meet and greets and hang out, and who knows, maybe nobody shows up, I don't know. So they're geared towards different audiences.
Okay, but again, on the 15th and the 16th in Lincoln and Omaha. So if you're in that part of the world, stop by and see Taylor. And we will have these dates, times, and addresses in the show notes, which means that I will do it.
I said about it in my newsletter. I thought I had updated my website, but apparently I didn't, so... So this is now week three of serious work of going over this material that we've been working on for the last 3 weeks. And of course, we cannot do that without a preamble, which is probably overkill if you've been following us, but very important to my conscience. And that is just to express my gratitude to the brave souls who sent this in. And to reiterate that we are not tearing down, criticizing. I don't want people to feel bad. I know that when you're an aspiring author, there's just that pain of, am I good enough? Am I good enough? Am I good enough? The simple answer is yes. Yes, you are good enough. This was good enough. We're just tweaking it and making it a little better and using it as an example to answer some questions others had about how to do inner dialogue, external dialogue. We've gone over showing versus telling and how to strengthen sentences by using stronger words and cutting out words. And now we're on to actually the whole thing that got this started with this particular piece is this wonderful person struggled because there are point of view issues in this piece where mid-story or towards the end of the story, it switches where we're no longer in Michelle's head, but we get into the agent's head. And for those of you who are just catching up, this is a small chapter out of a larger work, and this particular segment is titled Searching for an Agent. It takes place entirely inside an office in which our young female character is trying to get into the music industry, and she's having this discussion with a sleazeball. And so the point of view actually was really what this wonderful person was looking for help on. So that's going to be really exciting. And I've also been promising since the first show on this series that we're going to break out an entire paragraph of action and description and insert it into a paragraph of dialogue. I'm going to show you how I would do that. As if this preamble isn't long enough already.
Well, I have to do my preamble now, and that is that you'll find all of this material in the show notes, in addition to the names and addresses of all the places where Taylor's going to be for the rest of her life that I'm now apparently in charge of. We'll have the original and the final version of this material in the show notes, as well as links to back episodes if you missed any of those.
Right. Wonderful. Yay, Steve. Everybody applaud Steve. This would not happen without Steve.
And we are getting some laughs today, so we're happy about that.
Yes. So also just to remind everybody that just because I do it this way doesn't mean it's right. I'm showing you how I do it so that you can take away from it and do it how you do it. But sometimes it's a lot easier to learn when you see it done versus somebody just telling you how it's done. So I'm just showing you how I work, and you can take it from there. But there is no right way. There's no wrong way. There is just, this is my way, and you do it your way, and everybody's happy.
And for those of us who will not be in Nebraska this weekend, this is a way of learning from Taylor without making a long drive or a plane flight.
You should still come see me. Or Dallas when I do the week after that, because I will be in DeSoto, Texas, the following week. Okay, so we're going to tackle first the dialogue and inserting the action beats.
Okay, and for people who may have missed it two episodes ago, Taylor actually was redoing the dialogue in a paragraph, and she said, insert beat one here. Insert beat two here, insert beat three. That's what we're doing now. We're inserting those beats.
Right. So the dialogue as we have it now, after it's been cleaned up to the degree that we've cleaned it up, it says, yeah, gorgeous, a biggie. You don't listen, beat one. You don't get to do that until you've gone platinum, beat two, beat three. I've been trying to help you and you don't do a damn thing I say. Oh no, it's got to be your way. So now we're going to move to the paragraph where we have all the material for those beats. And its original reads, the man stubbed out his smelly cigar and reached into a drawer to pull out another, which he quickly lit with a match that stank up the room nearly as badly as the foul-smelling cigar. He blew out the flame with a cloud of smoke and tossed it in an ashtray full of butts and burnt matches. Now, this part gets a little tricky because I'm doing two levels of work at the same time. One is I'm cleaning up the text a little bit. The other is I'm splicing it up because the order of these actions could be a little stronger if they were switched around. So this gets a little complicated as I try and explain it because it's not like I'm just excising one part, one piece, and then another piece. Like sometimes there's like multiple splices together. So here, the first thing I'm doing is in the first sentence where the man stubbed out his smelly black cigar, I'm getting rid of the word smelly. That is implied. And smelly as a word is a little bit, I don't know, toddler-esque, and it sort of takes away the gravitas of the situation. So I'm just going to remove that. We don't need it. And another thing I'm going to do Well, it's really difficult to say it because it all is contextual and it has to do with how I spliced up these texts. So here we go. For beat one, I'm taking the man stubbed out his black cigar, and I'm taking way down at the bottom of the sentence where it says, and toss it in an ashtray full of butts and burnt mashes. I'm moving that. I'm putting those together. The beginning and the end now become one. The man stubbed out his black cigar and tossed it in an ashtray of full of butts and burnt matches. That's beat one. Beat two, where it said and reached, we're just going to get rid of that little and there. And we're going to start the next beat with the word he. He reached into a drawer, pulled out another. To pull, it's not as strong as pulled. And it's saying that he reached into the drawer to do something. Let's just have him do the thing, right? So he reached into a drawer, pulled out another. We're going to get rid of which he quickly lit. A, because quickly is an adverb. We don't need that there. We can show it in other ways. And the which he also comes a little bit redundant when we can just squish them together in a series of movements. So he reached into a drawer, pulled out another, lit it with a match, and blew out the flame. So you can see that blew out the flame came from way down in the next sentence. I've just excised that and added it so that it's now one smooth series of actions. Because the part about the room stinking up, it is a separate thought. And if it's kept together with the action, it interrupts the movement. So you want to keep the movements together and keep the thoughts together in separate beats. And that allows the flow to go seamlessly in the order in which we would experience it. So beat two becomes, he reached into a drawer, pulled out another, lit it with a match, and blew out the flame. And then we take the rest of this paragraph that's left, all the little pieces, and turn it into beat three, which becomes, the cloud of smoke stank up the room nearly as badly as a cigar. So when we put those all together with the dialogue, what we get is this. Yeah, gorgeous, a biggie. You don't listen. The man stubbed out his cigar and tossed it in an ashtray full of butts and burnt matches. You don't get to do that until you've gone platinum. He reached into a drawer, pulled out another, lit it with a match, and blew out the flame. The cloud of smoke stank up the room nearly as badly as the cigar. I've been trying to help you, and you don't do a damn thing I say. Oh, no, it's got to be your way.
Now, is that all one paragraph?
It's all one paragraph. Or it can be broken down. Right now, I have it as one paragraph because I'm not getting into it and cutting and chopping. And like, you know, this is not my material, so mm-hmm. I haven't messed with it on that. But it doesn't have to be one paragraph. I've found that long paragraphs that aren't broken up can lose the reader. So there's nothing wrong with breaking it down with the beat being coming first, the motion becoming first, or the thought. Like you could break it down where it goes, you know, the dialogue, beat one, dialogue, paragraph break, beat two, paragraph break, beat three, dialogue.
Okay, and what's the purpose of interrupting the flow of the dialogue with these beats? What purpose does that serve?
It's that when we're talking, we typically do things as we're talking. And here we have a wall of description. And we could have this dialogue without any of these movement beats, or just one of these movement beats, and it would be fine. But if we want to have that description in there, it needs to take place as the person is speaking, because generally, as it goes, we don't talk and then stop and do all these things. It's just not how real life works, unless it's specifically weird for a reason. So you don't want to have this big wall of movement with no other purpose to it than to describe what's going on. It's really, it's description. And so if you're going to have description, the best way to get it in there is to insert it within dialogue or within movement. Now, again, this is not my work. If it was mine, I might cut it down even more. But I'm trying to use exactly what we have here so that we can see how to utilize what's already on the page.
And this is really interesting to me because it's something that we talk about a lot on the show. And you talk about ways of handling blocks of description and breaking them up and using them as beats. And it's one thing to hear that. It's another thing altogether to hear the specific example, or if you go to the show notes, to see the specific example. And it,
which is why we were begging for, yes, for material.
And it makes so much more sense when you hear it or see it this way. It's no longer theoretical. Oh, this is what she's talking about is what goes on in my mind when I hear you say, describe this.
Right. And so I will, in my own work, go a step further. And like, we have a lot of movement in this particular series of this description. And again, this isn't my work, but if it was my work, I'd be asking myself, why? What am I trying to show here? Like, remember we had that show where I had those questions that I asked myself, what am I trying to convey? Whose eyes am I in? Whatever. So when I'm looking at, like, can I eliminate this? Can I keep things moving quicker? What I'm looking at is, why is this here? What am I trying to convey? And if it's just to convey that the room is full of smoke and stinky, then I would likely take a part of that and move it elsewhere I really try to keep the description as interspersed with everything else so that it doesn't all show up in one place. Because what happens when it shows up in one place is it slows everything down. It glugs the story. We're no longer in any person's head. And if you have description in this case, like, again, don't want to mess with somebody else's work, but you can find a way to make description more meaningful and not just a wall of text if somehow the character is interacting with it on an emotional level. For example, and you have to be careful because you can veer the story off in a completely different direction by doing this, but for example, this could bring back a memory to Michelle of some horrible thing that happened in her childhood that reminded her the last time she was in a smoky room or whatever. And so on the one hand, you're doing it in order to bring the room to life, but there is no better way to bring smells and description, fragrances, sights, whatever, than through the sensations of memory. If you can find a way to connect your character to the description in the environment, then you have just taken it one step deeper than simply showing the reader the environment. Now they are going to feel the environment, and that is your ultimate goal with description.
Interesting. And it would be fun to have some examples of that sometime as well, because once again, I am I'm not a person who can actually envision things. I have to have examples.
Yeah, I get what you're
saying. I know our readers are smarter than I am, or our listeners are smarter than I am, so I don't have to worry about them. It's just me. I'm the one that doesn't get it.
No, and me. Trust me. This is like I've had to learn it by seeing myself do it because it didn't make any sense to me when other people were explaining it to me. Okay, so that more or less is how I would insert a paragraph of description into dialogue to blend them. And then if it was my own work, I would go a step further and just cut it down to its essence of what do we really need to bring it to life with as few words, as few motions as possible. And I would likely do that by introducing him smoking a cigar earlier on in the scene so that when this takes place, I'm not having to show it for the first time. So now we're going to move on to the heart of what got us here in the first place, which is POV issues. So POV is point of view. And just to recap, because everybody's at a different level in their writing, when you are telling a story, stories are composed of scenes. This is a scene right now that we're going through. The scene is always seen through somebody's eyes. If it's the narrator's eyes, the writer's eyes, then we're going to be able to know everybody's thoughts all at the same time. It's sort of an omniscient bird's eye viewpoint. Very rare, and it's hard to pull off in today's writing style. Readers aren't used to seeing it, and it feels a little, now, dear reader, let me tell you how Jane came to meet John, you know. So when we're in somebody's eyes, we're seeing it through their point of view. And it doesn't matter if you're in first person, I, if we're in second person, you, where the author, it's very rare to see this, where the author is saying, you walked through the door, you saw whatever, or third person, he, she, they, them. So it doesn't matter what person you're doing in it, the point of view is the character who's experiencing the moment. And if you switch from one character experiencing the moment to another character experiencing the moment in the middle of a scene, you can create reader whiplash, where it just throws them out of one and it takes a moment for them to get what's going on. Now, some authors can do it and do it really well. In fact, so well that I'm sitting there going, how the heck did they just do that? You know, that is amazing. I am such a stickler for point of view on my own that I will never change characters in the middle of a scene. And if I have more than one character's point of view in the same chapter, I will break it with a scene break where you have that gap, like lots of lines, and you can see that a new scene started. I refuse to switch characters in the middle of the scene because I go so deep into the characters, seeing it through their eyes, that to switch would feel like, wait, what? And the reader would have to go back and read it several times just to keep up. I'm not skilled enough to pull that off. And the other is I don't want to create reader whiplash. So this all came about because this author, very awesome, willing to let us use the material, said, I have this problem where, you know, here, read this and see what I'm talking about. Where if I don't include this information at the end, then it's missing something. It needs to have something, but it's not enough for a whole scene to take place. And so I read it, and I could immediately see what they are talking about. And there are some fixes. And I don't know if it's going to solve the problem for this person. I don't know if it would solve the problem for everybody. But this is how I would personally fix this point of view issue in this scene without having to write a whole other scene with a whole other point of view. Because the information that's in this scene is important to the story. And it's something that only the agent would know. Michelle won't know it. But by us being informed of it, now we're in the agent's head. So it's a true issue. So I'm going to read to you a little bit what came before the point of view issue hit, and then just read through the point of view issue so that everybody's on the same page. So Michelle breathed a heavy sigh of stench and smoke. This was going nowhere. Over 2 years and most of her savings trying to catch a break, and if something didn't work out soon, she'd be forced to admit defeat and go back to Charlotte, which meant staying with her parents until she figured out what to do next. She refused to walk out of here empty-handed. Can you recommend anyone else I might try? And here we go. The man thought for a minute. He'd had an odd encounter with a strange little guy at the coffee shop this morning. The guy had given him his business card and told him to send over anyone he wasn't interested in. He might could find a place for them. The man looked at Michelle for a moment longer and blew out some more smoke. Freaking gorgeous. Got a good voice, too. He wondered for a minute if he ought to try again to find a way to work with her. She had potential. He'd hate to give away a diamond. Nah, too much trouble. He dug into his pocket and found the card. You might try this guy. Don't know nothing about him, but you can try. So that's the end of that chapter. So obviously, this is kind of key information for what happens next in the story. Michelle has no idea about it. And so my solution to this issue is through dialogue. The key things that, and again, it comes down to what is the most important information that's being conveyed in this piece, of, in this little snippet. Now, I'm not the author. I'm going to assume I know what is the most important pieces of information that's being conveyed. It is that this guy, the agent, is going to give her a recommendation for someone else. But he's also somewhat reluctant to let this girl go. But the main thing is, where did this card come from? So, we do it by dialogue. I'm going to teach you a little Taylor trick that once I point it out to you, it's going to be embarrassing because now you're going to see how often I use it. And when I'm using it in my own writing, I'm constantly looking ways to do it other ways so that it doesn't become so in your face. Now it's going to be so freaking obvious. When one character is, through their thoughts, explaining to the reader what another person is thinking, the two magical words are as if. As if. It allows you to put a lot of description and a lot of assumption for the reader, to give the reader the clues that they need without stating what the other person is thinking by saying as if. Right? So the original for this point of view, what we're going to do is we're going to take the most important part of this point of this agent's thoughts, and we're going to convert it into actions and dialogues that we're still seeing it from Michelle's point of view. So she said, "Can you recommend anyone else I might try?" Now, when we switch and we're still in the original text, it says, "The man thought for a minute." So Michelle doesn't really know that the man is thinking for a minute. That's when we automatically switched into the wrong point of view. But Michelle can watch and see what he does. And so I just kind of cobbled together some words to give an idea of what could take place right here. It's not necessarily the right way. Do as you please. This is a way that it could be done. The man paused, cigar suspended between his fingers, as if he'd stopped mid-thought. Okay? We are still in Michelle's point of view. He said, "Had an odd encounter with a little guy this morning, with a strange..." Well, see, I'm still tweaking words on this right now. This original, like, part of the problem with moving from one point of view to the next is you have to change the phrasing to make it work. And we've already got odd encounter, and he's also calls him a strange little guy here. So we can't do odd and strange in the same sentence. So I just X'd out a strange, but something else might need to go there. I just didn't put anything in. But had an odd encounter with a little guy. And it said at the coffee shop this morning, but that's his own internal thoughts, and it's too much information to convey to someone you're just talking to. So I cut that out, not because it didn't belong, but it doesn't belong in conversation. Had an odd encounter with a little guy this morning. Gave me his business card instead of the guy had given him his business card. Gave me his business card. Told me to send him anyone wasn't right for me. Said maybe he could find place them. Said maybe he could place them. So it went from the agent's inner thoughts of the guy had given him a business card and told him to send over anyone he wasn't interested in, he might find a place for them. Now, in dialogue, he's telling the girl, gave me his business card, told me to send him anyone wasn't right for me, said maybe he could place them, right? So we've got that conveyed through dialogue. The next phrase in the original said, the man looked at Michelle for a moment longer and blew out some more smoke. I question mark using the man again because we use it so much. Might want to change that to agent or to something else, but too many words. It's an action, but it's too many words. So I just cut it down. The agent exhaled another plume. Now, in the original, it moves to the agent's thoughts, which says, freaking gorgeous, got a good voice too. I scratched it out. Now, if we really needed to use that and find a way to insert it into dialogue, we could, but I don't personally think it's necessary. We've already cut out a lot of the how much he thinks she's awesome. It just wasn't enough. It didn't seem important enough to spend the time working on it, so I just eliminated it. The next part continues in the agent's thoughts. He wondered for a minute if he ought to try again to find a way to work with her. She had potential. He'd hate to give away a diamond. Nah, too much trouble. So I'm going back to dialogue here, and I'm saying, you know, the agent exhaled another plume. You got potential. Hate to give away a diamond, but you're too much trouble. He dug into his pocket and found the card. And now we have, in the original, gone back to dialogue again, and we're going to stick with dialogue. I'm just going to change it a little. He dug into his pocket and found the card. Might try him. Don't know nothing about him. What's it hurt? And the reason why at the end of the original where it said, you might try this guy, don't know nothing about him, but you can try, we've got double use of the same word, so I'm cleaning it up to keep the flow correct. So might try him, don't know nothing about him, but what's it hurt? And that is the end of that segment.
So you were able to convey the key bit of information that part of the scene was meant to convey without changing the point of view.
And exactly.
You did it through dialogue and the as-if trick.
Yes. We're switching the tenor of the story by the guy who's been all rough, 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 rough. All of a sudden, he stops and he's thinking. According to her, right? And then he tells her, I had this odd encounter. The guy this morning gave me his business card, told me to send him anyone that wasn't working for me. And he takes another exhale. Like you can tell, he's still thinking. And then he tells her, you got potential. Hate to give away a diamond, but you're too much trouble, which is the crux of it, right? You're too much trouble. And he digs into the pocket, gets the card, and says, don't know anything about him, but what's it hurt? So it's the entire essence of that agent's point of view is through dialogue minus a few little emphases here or there that don't really hurt too much to cut them out.
Now, if this were yours and you just made all these changes, would you leave the scene here or would you add another line or two?
I'd have to know more of the story to really say that, because as an author, you have a bird's eye view, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what's coming down the line. And I think that handing someone a card and, you know, you've already clued the reader into that this was a little bit of an unusual situation and saying, what's it hurt? That creates questions like, yeah, what was that all about? And you want to turn the page to find out. So I don't think that's a bad place to stop a chapter.
Okay, that ends our three-part series where we took a single scene that an author was kind enough and generous enough to send us, and we really broke it down in minute detail in three different sessions dealing with dialogue, internal dialogue, adding beats to things, and point of view, and we hope you will have found this. Let me rephrase that. We hope you found this enjoyable.
And yeah, endurable.
Yes, we hope you found it endurable. If you're still here, we guess you did find it endurable. The final version of this will be in the show notes, and we'll have different versions through three different sets of show notes, and I will link to all three versions in this episode.
We've already got ones up there. So like what we're seeing now is like the end, the beginning and the end. But if you want to catch all the in-betweens, I don't know, are you going to put all the in-betweens on this one too?
No, you're going to have to link back to the other one. So okay. It's just otherwise the people will have to endure the show notes as well. They'll be so long.
Yeah.
So that's it. What are we going to talk about next week, Taylor?
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. I'm spent.
All right. We will have a show for you next week. We don't know what it's going to be about yet, but who knows? We may start another series. So,
I mean, we hopefully will have more material, guys. So.
Yes, yes. If you have story problems or any kind of writerly situation that you want Taylor's help with, and you don't have the time to go to Lincoln, Nebraska, this is a great way to get the help. And
it's far more personal too. Like that, I can promise you that there is no one person besides Steve who would ever get this much attention on a piece of work from me at any workshop than what you can get here on the show. So
there we have it. Send it in. And obviously we can't take everyone's, but like Taylor said, we had several submissions last time, and we chose this one because there were so many elements that we could deal with, and we could turn it into a nice three-episode series.
And it was also at that right level where it was good on its own, but still enough room for us to work with it, to use it as an example. If it's too good, I can't use it. And if it's needs too much work, it'll take too much time to get it up to speed. So this was perfect.
Okay, so that is it. Taylor, what's our call to action? Is it to send in your writing problems?
That, but since that takes a lot of bravery and people might be reluctant to do that, let's have a part B. We haven't done a sign up to Taylor's mailing list call action for a while.
You have a mailing list?
You know, by now, we would
have forgotten. It's been so long, I've forgotten.
Right?
Yes, yes. How could we sign up for your email list?
Go to my website, which is taylorstevensbooks.com.
Wait a minute. You mean you have a website other than the one that I do for the show? You have your own website?
Hey, you keep that up, Steve. You're going to be doing my website, too.
taylorstevensbooks.com is the place to go.
Yes.
And what do they click on?
There's a connect with me button, and that'll take you to the sign up form. And every once in a while, signups just go into Never Neverland. So if you never get the confirmation link, just contact me directly, contact@taylorstevensbooks.com, and we'll see what we can do about getting you hooked up.
And what do they get if they're on your mailing list?
Me.
Well, beyond that, there is a lot of material that goes out on writing and the writing life. There's some stuff that goes out about your history. There are the monthly newsies where you have giveaways and things like that, and you talk about where you're at in your various projects. So there's a lot there. And so there's a lot of Taylor that you get if you sign up for the email list.
For some people, it's too much. And if it's too much for you, there are ways to get less of me.
Anyway, sign up at taylorstevensbooks.com. Click the Connect With Me button, and you will be connected with Taylor. We will be back again next week. Thank you for enduring this with us.
Thank you for your endurance. Cookies for everybody.
Bye.
Next week.